You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah. What are you gonna you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
What your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
I'm running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, y'all. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not
Hello?
Slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman, we always resisted and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope it's going to be a great day for you, and I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can't do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not, but it must be done, and it has to get done, and you better do it, and you will get it done. And you'll do it safely. You'll wear your mask. You'll keep your distance. You'll make sure that you get home safely. You're out there every time. Yeah. Another friend of mine just died from COVID. Wow. That's almost 15 people. Tell me. That's what I'm saying to us in terms of this, whether you want to call it a pandemic or a plandemic. The bottom line is, and even when I talk about vaccine, the bottom line is be safe. Do whatever you have to do. If you don't want to take the vaccine, don't. If you want to take the vaccine, do. Whatever that is. It's confusing, I know. But the bottom line is you got to be safe. You got to protect yourself and your family. So, and even at that, you know, you, when you go out in this world, you never know what might hit you and how it could hit you. I mean, when I went to that tournament, that basketball tournament 2 weeks ago with my grandson in Alabama, many people in that, even though masks were encouraged, didn't wear masks. But, I mean, that could be like a super spreader kind of event. All those, I mean, like about 12 courts, huge complex, you know, and playing ball and people, coaches, without, I'm telling you. And then now because of spring break, it's going to be another spike. Definitely going to be. And down the road, who knows? But hopefully I'll be here to talk about it. And we'll put some perspective on it. We'll put an African perspective on it. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. Of course, if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that, and the drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled, and it is up to date. That's right, Brother Kwaku. My good brother, I think he's on the road, going to visit his daughter and his grandson. Safe travels, my dear friend. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Monday, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Sister Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations
with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesday. On Thursday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening, brothers and sisters. That's right. Every Friday is time for an awakening at 8 p.m. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then on Saturday from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elder Council. The Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Products that are produced by us. That's right. Produced by us. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tahimba, he's ready. He's going to Senegal and Gambia April 2nd. That's next weekend. April 2nd to June. Excuse me, to June. April 2nd to April 12th. And then in May, he's going to Ghana, and that is from May 24th to June 5th. And then in November 18th through the 29th, Tanzania. And then December 24th, at the year's end, December 24th to January 5th, 2022, once again to Ghana. All these trips are $3,700, which is a very affordable. You can make it easier on yourself by putting a down payment down and pay on it monthly. Everything that you need is on the website. Go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org, and that's African spelled with a C. Of course, you know most of us now spell African with a K. And but of course, you can call Brother Bomani at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Baba Rinoco, he has a trip upcoming, and that is going to be August 1st through the 14th. Going to Kemet. Go to his website, drrinoco.com. Drrinoco.com. And go on the page and the upcoming trip, and you'll see some great pictures that he has taken previously of Kemet. Also, too, I want to thank Brother Andre Freeland and all the other brothers and sisters of our men group. That piece on Kemet was outstanding. Yes, it was 3.5 hours. And yes, I watched it, but I'm going to watch it again. Because many of the things that I used to talk to young people about ancient Kemet and what that particular piece. And I'll get more to you out there, brothers and sisters. I'll give you more about that and how maybe you could access that particular piece. But it is outstanding. 3.5 hours. I mean, it is, one could argue saying, it is close to the truth of what about ancient Kemet. Number one, it clearly states, and it quotes even Dr. Shikanta Jop, ancient Kemet was African. All dramatizations, all illustrations, all animation, they're Africans. But what was interesting is no, they didn't chisel nothing. They painted. They did chisel some. They did chisel some Medunecher, or what the Greeks called hieroglyphs, but most of it was molded, even the granite, because they had a magnifying glass, a large magnifying glass. To me, this is more plausible than what I used to tell. Yeah, they would travel down the Nile River to the quarries and, you know, chiseled the blocks of stone and dragged them to the river and sailed them down river when the river was inundated. And then they take them off the barge and they push them. The amount of human work that would take. This is a very interesting video. And I want to thank my good brothers, my good friends. And I know some of them are listening, and I appreciate that. I really do appreciate that. So go to drrinoco.com. drrinoco.com. Many of the things I'm talking about are on that website, and a lot of pictures. I mean, a lot. And itinerary and all of it. You know, Abu Simbel. Yeah. So when you see how formed these are, you see that they're, you know, there's no chisel marks. They're beautiful because they were molded. They were molded. That's why many of the statues you see in granite, like, man, there must have been some really great. No, they were molded. Yes, there were great artists to create the cast when they poured it. We'll talk more about that. I got to continue on here. It's exciting. Exciting to me. Habashah, HabashahIncorporated.org. Go to Habashah. Habashah stands for helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. HabashahIncorporated.org. The great mission of Habashah, the Habashah Works Program, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, Urban Green Jobs, the Kashi Project that is going on as I speak right now in Ghana and is doing well. They have another program that they have here. It's called Reparation Initiative, an 18-month step-by-step training to come home to the motherland, how to prepare yourself to go back to Africa to do great work. HabashahIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group. The Ledge Group stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. Become a member of the Ledge Group, brothers and sisters. Go to ledgegroup.com, theledgegroup.com. And they also, you can enter a raffle to win a Tanzanian African safari. A Tanzanian African safari. You can, and of course, they deal with the four areas that are true and basic to life: food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects going on the continent. They have 12 projects in 6 countries on the continent, employing over 170 people and over 260 members. They need more members. The Ledge Group. .com. BB Atumi. BBAtumi.com. Remember, brothers and sisters, I keep asking you and I keep telling you, please check out BBAtumi.com. ABIBITUMI.com. Their Saturday seminar by Obadale Kambon is this Saturday at 9 a.m. It's at 9 a.m. And that deals with the topic is integration, apartheid, and the untouchability. You know, Baba Kambon, Brother Kambon, he discusses the problematic tradition in which integration is to occur between anyone who happens to be on the African continent without regard or whether or not such integrationism is in the ultimate interest of African people. And he cites a few things as opposed to solutions. So check out the African Saturday seminar series, but they also have classes. They have classes in Yoruba, Akan, Wolof, Kiswahili. I mean, this is a great website. They have products, they have news feeds, information shops. Go to bbatumi.com. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta. I'm Ralph David Abernathy. It has what you need. Believe me, it's a great stop and shop. On the weekends, they have catered vegetarian, vegan cuisine. It's outstanding. I've tried it. I've had it. I mean, it's great. Go to Wadada's. That's located right on Ralph David Abernathy, right across the street from Soul Veg, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. And the Shrine of the Black Madonna is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, right down the street, right on Ralph David Abernathy. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mile. The Medu Bookstore, Mama Nia, she's open. She's doing it. A lot more space and so forth. Give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. They have the finest selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, figurines, and you name it, they have it. Okay, that's the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The other bookstore we promote, of course, is my good brother and good friend, Brother Gazimde Ajamu, at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore located in Lithonia. Give him a call. If he doesn't have the book that you are looking for, believe me, he'll get it. He has a delicious coffee bar, a delicious Cameroon boil with other selections of African coffee and teas and so forth, and pastries. That's the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Give him a call at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. Because there is light in the Black Dot. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, is Us Lifting Us. Their Thursday night, tomorrow night broadcast, their Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The program is called Dare to Win. That is Us Lifting Us. On the program, it is from 9 p.m. to 10, from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern Time. If you want to call to listen, you can do so. If you want to call to make comments or questions, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. That's Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop, located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall booth 225. For more information, contact our dear sister Shelly Amonset at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. That is the Sun Goddess Sense, the one-stop natural shop for all your needs. Check them out. Sister Gabby at Sanjay-Haiti. Sister Gabby at Sanjay-Haiti doing outstanding work. Please, brothers and sisters, go to the website at sanjay-ied.org and see for yourself the work that is being done in education for our young children in the rural area, the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Healthcare, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, trying to make it happen. That's Sister Gabby. Go to Sanjay, SONJE-HAIITI.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Baba Baruti, he has Common Sense Security coming up next month. I'll get more information about that, that you can go on that webinar on a Saturday. But of course, you can donate to what great work Baba Baruti and Mama Ya Baruti are doing, particularly with our young people, raising our young warriors at Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. But, of course, you can make PayPal, payments with PayPal and Cash App. If you go to Cash App, put in the $ YAA, the letter M, and then the last their last name, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And, of course, if you want to buy books, go to AkabinHouse.com. Brother Baruti is a prolific writer. AkabinHouse.com. In fact, we're going to read some Baba Baruti right now. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. March 23rd. If the culture is incapable of unity, it is incapable of survival as a free and equal people, and we will deserve all the inequities imposed upon it. For it will have proven beyond all question that it is indeed unfit to survive as a people free and equal in every aspect whatsoever with other people of the world. Chancellor Williams. It is very easy for Urugu to control the interests and appetites of spoiled African children because they have been molded into weak, needy individuals. Given that they are the dominant economic power in all areas of people activity, Yerugu is better able to satisfy more of their materialistic and attention needs than we can. And naturally weak, needy individuals adopt the politics of whoever feeds or soothes their tortured egos. Weak individuals overwhelmed by lies become liars. We should remember Ptahotep's wisdom that he who is ruled by his appetite belongs to the enemy. Ptahotep of the third dynasty of Egypt. These words were spoken over 5,000 years ago. Ptahotep. There were 30 dynasties in ancient Kemet. Dynasty can last from a day to hundreds of years. Man. And then there are emotional as well as intellectual and material appetites. One of the general characteristics of spoiled is that they are subject to fits of anger when they cannot easily win or are proven wrong. In fact, it is one of the spoilage's most visible qualities. That along with argumentation, which is equally reflected of their mental subjugation into a culture proud of its penchants for noise and confusion, are hallmarks of weakened, broken, ego-ridden minds. We are at war for the sanity and survival of African people. Let me repeat, we are at war for the sanity and survival of African people. We are at war for the sanity and survival of African people. We cannot afford to gift our children to enemy interests. We have to stop coddling weakness. Affirm, I work towards the unification of African people. Affirm, I work towards the unification of African people. This program is here every Monday and Wednesday. And the only thing we talk about is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people, and making us duly aware of all the things that hinder that. Because for us, it is Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify or die. March 24th. It cannot be emphasized enough that one can be an advocate for the end of oppression of African women and not be a feminist. Excuse me. Just being born an African and talking about the condition of African people does not make one automatically a Pan-Africanist. Being born an African woman and talking about the condition and welfare of African women does not automatically make that person a feminist philosophically. The terms of feminism and women are not one and the same. Feminism represents one approach and not the only approach to examining the place of women in the world. It is a particular and specific ideological viewpoint and not an all-encompassing monolithic meta-linguistical voice for all women. Felicia Watkins, that is the wife of Mario Beatty. They were the New Jack Scholars when I met them in the 90s. They were at Temple University getting their doctor's degrees. Yeah, beautiful people. And Brother Mario Beatty is the president of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, ASCAC. Beautiful people. The record of European females as leaders and participants in the genocidal oppression, and you got to understand that in the genocidal oppression of African people is right before our eyes. It is they who are responsible for the deaths of a majority of lynched African men. From the initial lying or rubber stamping the lies about violations of their make-believe chastity to preparing for the festivities of burning, shooting, hanging, as well as fighting over the private parts of our murdered ancestors for souvenirs. Smiling Caucasian racist traditions continue. Today, they comprise one quarter of all active known racist group membership and half of all new recruits. I'm telling you, it is who they are. And has noted in the critiques of feminism, female Yerugu have and continue to benefit as no other group. They have vested interest in the perpetuation of quote, race-based privilege. Racial nepotism is the work of Yorugu's daughters and sons equally. Affirm, I fight to end oppression of African women, and I am not a feminist. Affirm, I fight to end oppression of African women, and I am not a feminist. Brothers and sisters, the Inyesesim of daily revolutionary thought. The Inyesesim. Tomorrow, Sister Bayina Bello, along with a group of brothers and sisters. Let me pull that up. I got to pull up stuff here because, you know, I'm all over the place. Yeah, I'm all over the place. Oh, this is Common Sense Security. That's going to be April 24th, on a Saturday from 9 a.m. to 12 noon with Baba Baruti. So that's the wrong one. I didn't mean to pull that one up. I meant to pull up this one. And this is tomorrow. I'm going to read the link for you again today, brothers and sisters. Hopefully that you'll get the link. Because, and here's the link. And I went on and I registered. And of course, it doesn't cost anything. It is from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, Thursday, March 25th. It's a Zoom piece, The Battle at Chateau at Perrault. And it's hosted by our dear sister, Mama Bayina Bello. And the guests are Dr. Wade Nobles, Professor James Small, Dr. Noka Rashidi, and Sister Ilya Danto. And if you ever heard, she's been on Elliot's program, Time for Awakening, a few times. She's outstanding. And, of course, Baba Bayina Bello. I'm going to have her on the program hopefully next week. Yes. Brothers and sisters, go to www.fondasyonfelicite.com. I'll repeat. So you can, I mean, it's free. I mean, they're seeking donations, but it's free. And so if you have the time tomorrow at from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern, and you adjust the times anywhere else, because you can get this information, register anywhere around you, just the times. It is www.fondasyonfelicite.com. And it's going to be an outstanding program. I'm looking forward to listening to the program. And yeah. Let me begin today by talking about a man who I admired when I first started to play basketball and learn how to play basketball. I don't know if I saw it on TV or whatever. I fell in love with Elgin Baylor. Elgin Baylor was a tremendous athlete, tremendous. I was watching, and yesterday I watched some of these sports programs because I wanted to hear what they had to say about Elgin Baylor. I wanted to see the footage and so forth. You can go on YouTube. I've been on YouTube tons of times over the years looking at old clips of Elgin Baylor, remembering some of the games that I seen coming up. You know, In fact, I thought about it the other day, the one game I wanted to see, I think it was 69 Christmas or 70 Christmas. I'm not sure. Either or. But the network feed was messed up. And I was waiting because they had advertised. I was just waiting. You know, it was going to be the Lakers against the Phoenix Suns. And the Suns, I think this was their second year. The Phoenix Suns and the Milwaukee Bucks came into the NBA at the same time. And they had 1 year. And then the following year, Milwaukee won the coin toss and selected then Lew Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And the second pick was Phoenix, and they selected this cat named Neil Walk out of Dayton. And so I was going to watch that game, and the network feed was so messed up, man. I was so damn mad, because anytime you could get a chance to see Elgin Baylor, believe me. In fact, I saw him in a game before Milwaukee had a team. 2 years before they brought, the year before they had a team, I was on a basketball team, and we got tickets to go see the Chicago Bulls play the Los Angeles Lakers in Milwaukee. And I got to see Elgin Baylor playing. What a highlight. I got to see Elgin Baylor. And, you know, he was phenomenal. And so yesterday, watching Stephen A. Smith, who I can't stand. I'm just being real. Because, like, I mean, you know, with his vernacular and all this hyperbole and all this, you know, but he's black. He's not African. And he's stated that. And he loves capitalism. He loves all that. So, you know, and on a few issues over the years, he's been very weak. In fact, the European Jew that's on the program with him, Max Kellerman, has been more on point on the issues than he has. And it was that way yesterday. Max Kellerman stated what I have always stated about Elgin Baylor. Elgin Baylor was a transcendent player. He was the first one in the NBA to bring moves to the game. In fact, he wrote a book called Hang Time. Because he would fly in the air. He was an original high. He was the high flyer. He was the doctor before the doctor. He was Michael before Michael. Before Kobe. Before LeBron. Elgin Baylor. And he wrote this book called Hang Time. Because he would fly in the air and hang. One-handed. Cats be going down and he's still there. And then he just put it up. I mean, Elgin Baylor was just a dynamic player. But they couldn't beat Boston. In fact, I was in D.C. around the time of the All-Star game in D.C. I think Allen Iverson was the MVP of that All-Star game. And going through the airport, I flew Midwest Express. And if anybody is familiar with Midwest Express, that really their base was out of Milwaukee. It was great airlines to fly at the time. You know, this is before all the madness. This is in the late 90s. You know, they serve nice meal, we get wine, real silverware, all of that stuff back then. So I'm on the plane with Ray Allen with the Bucks and Glenn Big Dog Robinson, who was at the Bucks. They were both in the All-Star game that time. And so walking to get my luggage was Bill Russell. Understand this. Yes, I hated the Celtics. The Celtics always beat the Lakers. Elgin Baylor didn't win one championship, which angered me. In fact, I'm going to be honest with you, as I'm always honest with you. In 1969, I thought they had their best chance. They had Wilt Chamberlain. He had just come to the team from Philadelphia. 76ers. They had Jerry West, one of the baddest Caucasians ever, and of course Elgin Baylor, and a good host of other players. It went down to a seventh game, and my team lost, and I cried. And I had cats over the crib, and they was messing with me so tough, man. You know, in fact, one of them called me, yeah, it ain't Elgin Baylor, it's Elgin Failure. Elgin Baylor, Elgin Failure. Yeah. And so I'm walking in the terminal with Bill Russell. Hey, Mr. Russell, how you doing? Because I like Bill Russell. I like the brothers on Boston. Sam Jones, Casey Jones, Sat Sanders, John Thompson. The late John Thompson who wore a towel over his shoulder, not because he perspired a lot, well, he did, but his mother wore a towel over her shoulder as she cooked and cleaned. So to be close to his mother, he wore a towel over his right shoulder. And when he passed, coaches across who had been influenced by him, or just like Patrick Ewing wears a towel over his right shoulder. John Thompson played for the Boston Celtics. And so I said, Mr. Russell, you know, man, y'all could have let Elgin win one of them. He looked down at me with a smile and said, uh-uh. Yeah, man. And then, of course, they lost to the Knicks in 70. In 72, his knee problems were just so bad that he retired 9 games in. Jerry West and tried to encourage him to hang on. But right after he retired, the Los Angeles Lakers went on a 33-game win streak, the longest in professional sports, in professional team sports. A couple of teams got close, but no, 33 games. They did it. And guess who broke it? That's right, the damn Milwaukee Bucks. On a Sunday afternoon, I saw that game, the Milwaukee Bucks. Thank you for listening to me reminisce here about Elgin Baylor. I'm going to go through some other subjects too, though, but I just got to get this because to me it was very important. And the Milwaukee Bucks beat them. That ended 33 games, but they beat the New York Knicks 4-1 to win the NBA championship. The guy that took his place was Jim McMillan in the lineup. Jim McMillan was a great player. Good player. I like Jim McMillan. He later went on to play for the Buffalo Braves. Him, Garfield Hurd, and McAdoo. Oh, man, they had a nice – and Randy Smith, they had a nice squad. Nice squad. And then, of course, that franchise moved from Buffalo, New York, to San Diego. And so they became – because, you know, San Diego used to have a team called the Rockets, but they moved from San Diego to Houston, the Houston Rockets. And so they moved and they became the Clippers. The Clippers. And so what Max Kellerman said, he said that Elgin Baylor revolutionized the game. He was a transcendent player. What that means is that he takes the game to a new level. Let me read you, because he saved the Lakers. The Caucasian who owned the Minneapolis Lakers. See, they call them the Lakers because they started in Minneapolis. And they had won 5 championships with George Mike. And George Mike was the NBA's first original big man. And, of course, Minneapolis is what? What's on their license plate? The land of 10,000 lakes. They ain't no damn lakes in Los Angeles. They should have changed the name. Just like they ain't no jazz being played in Utah, is it? No. That's New Orleans. New Orleans jazz. They should reclaim their damn name. They're going to call it Utah, I don't know, mountains, Mormons. But yeah, he said, if it wasn't for Elgin Baylor, then, you know, it would have been bankrupt. He says here, with his superb athletic talents and all-around game, Baylor was seen as the kind of player who could save a franchise, and he did. According to Minneapolis Lakers owner Bob Short, in 1971 interview with the Los Angeles Times, he said, if Elgin said I'm not going to come out, I'm not going to join the team, I would have been out of business. The club would have gone bankrupt. He was the number one draft choice of the Minneapolis Lakers. 2 years he played there, and then the franchise moved to Los Angeles. And you know the history of that. The Lakers played in many championships against the Boston Celtics, you know, and they lost. In fact, Boston won a string of 8 straight championships, just like the UCLA Bruins of that time, around the same time in the 60s and the 70s. 8 straight. And so Elgin had retired, but they gave him a ring. gave him a ring, a championship ring, because he was on the team. He was on the team at the start, but he had to retire because he just couldn't play. But I'm going to tell you, fans, I'm going to tell you, brothers and sisters, when he could play, he was outstanding. He took the game to another level. He was the first one to put moves into the game. Because, you know, understand the NBA at the time in the 50s, all of them, and previously, in fact, Boston and the Los Angeles Lakers, they both have 17 championships. Almost half of the championships in the NBA totally. That's how dominant both teams were. Well, Boston was dominant back in the 50s when, it, you know, 50s, late 50s and the 60s. But the Lakers were dominant in the 80s and a few after that. You know, Boston won two championships with Bird and one championship with Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen. But my boy Kobe, the team with Kobe, they had won two championships. They came through to beat Boston. But I'm going to tell you this, brothers and sisters. I'm a Laker fan. And I'm a Laker fan because of Elgin. I've always been a Laker fan. I'm not a fair weather fan. I don't just jump ship. When the team was bad, I was still a fan, just like the Jets. I'm a Jets fan. And you know how pitiful their ass is. I'm a Mets fan. I'm a Mets fan because of 1969. 1969 was my year. It could have been a great year. In 1969, the Chicago Cubs had a big lead over the New York Mets. And they only started, and this was the first year they had a playoff between the top two teams to see who would play for the World Series. And Chicago Cubs had a big lead. The Mets overtook them. And so the Mets played the Atlanta Braves. The Braves had moved from Milwaukee a few years earlier. They played the Atlanta Braves. And the Mets beat them. And the Baltimore Orioles played the Minnesota Twins. And Baltimore dusted them. Baltimore had a tough team. Everybody thought that Baltimore just squashed the Mets. There's a movie, if you want to check this out. Frequency. If you ever check this movie out, Frequency. It's about the Aurora Borealis. And there's a part in the movie where this guy is telling this guy about the New York Mets and what's going to happen to prove that he got information from the future. His son, who was a little boy at the time, and he becomes a, his father is a firefighter, but he becomes a police officer. And there's a case of a bad cop raping women and so forth. So I'm just trying to give you the gist of it. But he tells him about this Mets game to prove that he's not lying. He says, in that game, Cleon Jones, who's at bat, he's going to be hit on the foot. And there will be some shoe polish on the ball, proving that he was hit so he could take a base. The Mets beat the Orioles that year. And then, so that's the Mets. The Jets beat the Baltimore Colts in January 12th of 69 for the Super Bowl, the third Super Bowl being played after the two victories by Green Bay. My Jets, I had them. I betted on them as a teenager. Boy, without a loss, I don't know what the hell I'd have done. I ain't got no money. And then, of course, the Lakers. The Lakers played the Boston Celtics in 69, and they lost at home. So imagine I could have had the trifecta. The trifecta. Elgin Baylor is a transcendent player. That means that he played the game and took it to another level. After him, the other transcendent player, I would say, was Connie Hawkins. If people can understand and remember Connie Hawkins, the big sweeping moves and so forth. After Connie, of course, was the Doctor. The Doctor took it a whole nother level. I mean, the Doctor was legendary. And then after the Doctor was Michael, considered the greatest player of all time, the true GOAT, the greatest player of all time. And then after Michael, LeBron. I ain't going to put Kobe in there because Kobe and Michael were pretty much the same player. Kobe was great. Kobe Bean Bryant was great, but he wasn't a transcendent player because he played just like Michael. A transcendent player does something different to the point that elevates the whole level of the game. And that's what LeBron did. LeBron took it to a level where you could rebound, assist, all of that. LeBron. I don't know who's going to be the next transcendent player. I don't know if it's going to be Zion Williamson. He would have to do some great things consistently, because all of those transcendent players were great for a number of years. For a number of years. I thank you for letting me talk about Elgin Baylor, my childhood idol, somebody who I thought was just fantastic. Fantastic. And even though he was the executive of the L.A. Clippers during the reign of Donald Sterling, and the team never won, they had a good year, and he was voted the executive of the year as a general manager. He coached New Orleans. He coached the New Orleans. In fact, I was, when he coached, and I remember him walking down there, and I yelled at him, "Elgin Baylor, love you, my brother." He looked up at me, gave me some five, you know what I'm saying? That's great. So we're going to take a break. And if you want to get on this conversation on the way back, I'm going to continue to talk about sports. I'm going to talk about the NC2A. I got to talk about them because they, it needs to be talked about. Yeah. Yeah, the NC2A. So I'm going to take a break now, And then we come back, brothers and sisters, hang with me. If those who are already on, you know what you got to do. Hit star twice and get in on this conversation. Or dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Flight time. Donald Byrd. Yep. Donald Byrd and the Blackbirds. You're right. Thank you. Yep. And I played that for Elgin Baylor. He took flight on the basketball court. Now his descent. He is an ancestor. So I played Flight Time for all those brothers who have taken flight and taken the game to a whole nother level. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that's followed from 8 to 9 by Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with Host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. On Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I'm going to talk more about, I saw a nice piece I thought that we could talk about because this is March Madness. And I've said this many times. I've been hating and you know me, I hate it. The NC2A, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, for decades. And I hate it when this other cat, but when Emmerich, who's now the president, came in, I really hate because he just, the way he looked and what he said and how he sounded just made me want to punch him in the face. You know? That's why I hate Dabo Swinney of Clemson. Because Dabo Swinney said, no, the guy shouldn't get paid. His ass made millions. He made millions. These programs, these schools, let me just say this. Here's what Bill Maher said many years ago. He said, March Madness is really a staring reminder of what America was founded on, making tons of money off the labor of unpaid African people. That's the reality. The money that is made in NC2A off basketball and football by the power, so-called power conferences, the Big Ten, the Pac-10, the Big 12, the SEC, the ACC. Big money. I'm old enough to remember when there's none of us could play in the SEC, the Southeastern Conference. None of us. There were none of us in Kentucky. That's why I mentioned the other day about Texas El Paso and how I felt. And that was last Friday when Brother Mickey Dean was on. He remembers it. He remembered it too. And there's a movie called Glory Road that talks about that time when Coach Haskins took that team to Maryland. They played on the campus of Maryland. Old Cole Fieldhouse, I think it was called, in Maryland. And they beat Adolph Rupp. Adolph Rupp, Adolph Hitler, same sugar, honey, iced tea. And they beat them. Pat Riley was on that team. Pat Riley, the coach of the Lakers and Knicks and Miami Heat. He was on that team. And they beat them. Starting five brothers. Usually there was a quota. You couldn't start. You could start two, but you can't be starting three. You can't be having an over an abundance. You know. ironically, the racist ass Boston, not necessarily the racist ass Boston Celtics, because that's not the case, because the Boston Celtics were an early team to have us. And of course, if they didn't, they won when they got Bill Russell. They had Cousy, they had Heinsohn, they had all those other cats, Leskatoff and all. They didn't win until Bill Russell. And along with Bill Russell was Casey Jones, and later Sam Jones and Sat Sanders, and as I stated, John Thompson. That's when they won, and they continue to win. In fact, Bill Russell was the player coach for 2 years, and they won both years. One of them, of course, was unfortunately 69, but even in 68, it was the Lakers. They didn't start winning till then. The NC2A has, you know, is usury. That quote is profound because it's real. These Power Five conferences, the majority of the players are us. And they don't get paid nothing. Well, they get a scholarship. They go to this school. They get room and board. I remember when UConn, Shabazz Napier, after they won, they interviewed him and he talked about how hungry he was. Oh, it's just like recently. The NC2A is ashamed of doing something, and they do things incrementally. Just recently, they showed how the weight room training for men, how nice it was, the equipment and so forth, in the bubble in Indianapolis. The women are in a bubble, so to speak, in San Antonio, Texas. The men are in a bubble in Indianapolis, Indiana, and how nice it was. And so somebody said, thank God for social media. And I agree to some extent, because you can see things right then and right now, you know. And so she showed what little set of weights they have and how putrid it was, how punk, you know. And so once again, the NC2A was apologizing. And of course, they, you know, did some things to make an amends and put the equipment up in there and so forth. You know, they're only ashamed into doing something, you know. And then, of course, about a year or so ago, they said that some of the players can use, not now, not right at this moment, but in a year or so from now, they can use their image and their likeness, because that came out of when Ed O'Bannon, who played at UCLA, he saw one of the video games, and it was UCLA. And it was him. It was his face. It was a whole, you know, the video games today, these things are just, I mean, the technology and the imagery is just phenomenal. It is almost real-like, you know. It ain't like back in the day, 10, 15, 20 years ago. No, it is serious. And so he saw that. In fact, he was back in the day. And still, he recognized his image. And he sued I think NCAA was making money off of two, of course, because it was their game. But eSports, he sued them successfully. The bottom line is that that's what they do. This is capitalism, brothers and sisters. It is a mean, evil game. Everything about what Caucasians do is mean and evil. We got a caller. Caller, you want in at 478? 478-973. 478? Good afternoon.
Peace, family. How you doing? It's Sincere, brother.
Oh, my brother Sincere. Hey, brother. How you doing, man? Thank you for that call yesterday, and thank you for honoring, you know, having a program to honor me, and I appreciate that so much, Brother Sincere. I really do. This is Brother Sincere, one of our local brothers here in Atlanta, who does a great number of things, especially in terms of lifting up our brothers and sisters, lifting up our couples and families and so forth. And I appreciate that, man. So how you doing today?
Yes, sir. All is well, and loving the conversation. You know, I'm a bald head too. So I love I love the conversation.
We're good.
It's wonderful when we can see through the eyes of people that were in that time, in that space. I studied Elgin Baylor, but hearing it through your experience, that was beautiful, brother. I really appreciate that because that helps to put things in proper context. I know about the big O's, the Oscar Robertson.
Yeah.
The trophy namesake for the MVP when you win in the finals.
That's right.
Big Bill Russell.
That's right.
I just love that, and I appreciate it. I've been a student of ball for a long time. I played basketball in the Air Force, and I just love the conversation.
Well, thank you, man.
And the sentiment, as far as honoring you, brother, this is absolutely necessary. Your program is necessary. The array of topics, it's something that we need to hear. So I hope that everybody out there listening is sharing this information and just having it on around your children and that type of thing.
Right on. I appreciate that,
because it's important.
Man. It is. Well, what I'm trying to do is consistently say to our people, we have been warred upon, and I know that each day that passes, unfortunately, it is more entrenched. And our lack of understanding of that, we're ill-prepared to deal with it. But we must prepare ourselves that we are to be a people. Just as I read to you the Enye Sesim that Baba Baruti put together. And this volume two is strictly about warriors and warriorhood. As I read through it, it talks about preparedness. It talks about not us being weak and so forth. So that's what it's about. I support that. I support us. I support Pan-Africanism. I support us doing for ourselves, But as a young man, as a teenager, as a kid, I love sports too, And I wasn't great, but I played,
Right.
I played and boy, I loved Elgin Baylor, man. I really did. In fact, in middle school, they had NBA names for our teams. And I wanted the Lakers, of course. But they gave us the Syracuse Nationals. The Syracuse Nationals, the following year, they became the Philadelphia 76ers with Dolph.
Right.
Yeah. But that's how much I really loved watching him and sports at the time. But around about 20-some years ago, I recognized, like I said, I'm old enough to remember when there were no brothers playing in the South at none of these schools, Georgia, Vanderbilt, you name it. There were none of us. And I remember some of the first brothers that played. And then, of course, once that happened, the floodgates. See, Bear Bryant in the 70s, he called up John McKay at USC. He said, "John McKay, y'all come on down here and y'all play us down here in Alabama." Because all the boosters and all the people in Alabama, they didn't want no brothers on the team. USC came down there and waxed that ass, and see, the point that Bear Bryant was making, if we don't get none of these athletes, these programs that we have will be so weak with the weak, so that opened up the gates right there. And of course, now you saw Alabama play this past year, if you did, in the championship, almost everybody, with the exception of linemen, are us. And Nick Saban made $12 million. The coaches of these teams make more money than because they're public schools, most of them, the ones that are. They make more money than anybody in that state. The state of that, where that university is, that state pays that head coach of the basketball or the football program that are prominent millions of dollars. And because they believe that they prepared that team so well that it is just to pay him that. Because the state makes that much money and the university make because of the amount of money that is so much, they got to spend it. So they use that for scholarships for other athletic programs, and they use that to update facilities and so forth. And once again, their attitude is, well, these kids get a scholarship. Richard Sherman, who played for a team that I love at the time, you know, the Legion of Doom, the Seattle Seahawks, when they went to the Super Bowl for 2 years in a row, but very bright brother, went to Stanford University. And he said himself, he said, that is a sham. Because a lot of times, because of practice and practices all year round, these programs that are in the big colleges, it's not a seasonal thing. It's a constant thing. And they practice all the time. So a lot of them don't get a chance to go to school. They don't get a chance. And so once their eligibility is over, they kick to the damn curb. You know? They reminded me of that brother from Creighton. I can't remember his name. People from Creighton University, played 4 years, couldn't read. Just like used to play for the Washington team, which is now then called the Redskins, Washington team. He couldn't read. And they rode him all the way through school because of his athletic ability, and it was good for the program. And then once the eligibility is up, kick you to the curb. He went to school in Chicago at Marva Collins. Marva Collins had a prep school, one of the first, you know, prep schools that taught outside of the school system, taught outside of the public school system, particularly to educate children. And there you see him in a picture in one of the little ass chairs. Because he was 6'8". He's sitting in one of the chairs in the classroom with his, but yet he got it and he became a teacher. He said, I'm going to try my best to make sure that others don't fall into the same situation that I did, you know, became an educator.
Right.
And they used him up, kicked him to the curb. They don't give a damn. That's why I'm saying if the brothers and sisters, particularly the brothers in the power conferences, the Big Ten, the Pac-10, all the big name conferences that make a lot of money, if those brothers said, hey, listen, we ain't going to play. We ain't going to play till we come to the table and negotiate something that is just for us, that is just. I ain't saying just for them, but it is just and honest for everybody who plays college athletes, who plays college sports at this level.
Right. And,
you know, imagine. Well, a group of athletes try to do the same thing in Northwestern University, you know, basically trying to establish a union. And because everybody is in cahoots, the Supreme Court or district courts or whatever, and they sided with the labor unions against them. They wanted the farce to continue, you know, of making all this money. And even the sports where some of the Caucasians are, where we're not, fencing. I mean, they have a lot of sports in universities that don't make no money. You know, the right. The two sports that make the money is college football and college basketball, particularly on a national level. I ain't talking about Division III, II. You know, I'm talking about the big schools that you see on TV all the time. They get all the publicity, all the notoriety, where all the good athletes these brothers want to go to, because they want to elevate themselves and take that to another level. I ain't blaming them. You know, hell, I'm doing this for my grandson right now. He's playing on these AAU teams so he can continue to get better. I mean, you know, but my contention is I'm helping you do this so you can get a scholarship, because, you know, education is more and more and more each year. Right now, it would cost, you know, one of these big schools will cost you over $100,000. To educate yourself, you know? So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, Baba Osi, let me ask you this while we're on the topic. What do you think about Deion going over to Jackson State and HBCU?
I thought that was outstanding. They need a person of note to go to these, just like one of the brothers went to Howard University to play ball instead of to a big school. Can't remember the young brother's name, right. Tall brother, African brother, you know?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think it's excellent. I'm hoping more and more come. You know, it would be great if these brothers said, you know what? Hell with going to your school. I'm going to go to Howard. I'm going to go to, you know, the ACBUs and we're going to be powerful. We're going to be, you know, it could happen. It's just like, hey, Brother Sincere, it's just like when the NBA, when the owners, the players didn't strike. The owners locked them out. The owners locked them out to save the owners, save them from themselves, to negotiate a better deal while the owners could get a bigger piece of the pie of the total revenue. And that's what happened. The owners locked them out. And what if the players said, you know what? Fine, you locked us out. We're going to come together and create our own league. Because nobody comes to these arenas to see your ass. They come to see us. You know? I'm going to tell you, man, if their thinking was in that line, but of course their thinking is, and a lot of it is out of fear, because one of the things that, you know, if you're challenging these Caucasians and this big, huge money, somebody who's trying to lead this gonna get offed. But hopefully that it's not about a leader. It is about a program. So if you do off the spokesperson, you turn the page and you continue on, because the real thing is to have some kind of economic equality, some kind of economic assuredness that your work and what you do is compensated. You know, but because like when you see coaches who, you know, that's like I said, I hate Dabo Swinney of Clemson. I was so happy he got his ass kicked by Ohio State. And I don't like Ohio State either, but man, was I cheering. That was the happiest moment for me. For me at that time, man, because he talked all that smack. And then, of course, he's against the players getting anything. And when I seen this interview with him, he was adamant about it. That's what turned me off so bad. Oh, no, they shouldn't get anything. In fact, they get some money. He made, I think, $7 or $8 million. He makes more money than anybody in the state of South Carolina. But it wasn't just that, though, Brother Sincere and listeners. He's got other revenue streams. He's got a television show, a radio show. He's got commercials. He's got commercials and other endorsements. But also, too, the uniforms that the players have to wear, whether it be Nike, Adidas, Reebok, or whatever, Under Armour, he gets that money. And the players have to wear that. They can't wear anything other than what is dictated to them by the university and by that coaching staff. And all the money goes to them. So, you know, to me, that has some sanity has to come into play in that situation. I hope it does real soon. I like to see it happen. But this little thing they talk about, you can now use your likeness and your, you know, that's bull. That ain't about nothing, man. So, okay.
Right.
All right, Brother Sincere.
All right, family. Peace and love. Continue to do what you do. We love you and we appreciate you.
Thank you, my brother. Peace to you. All right. All right, Brother Sincere. Yeah. You can, if you're on already, you hit star twice and join the conversation, or dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. In the Axios sports piece that I come, Axios, they have the unequal playing field. They focused on this whole thing that I'm talking about here, and the hard truths and deep dive series that they call it. And they're talking about what happened in sports, the unequal playing field, the unequal playing field. Sports are often sold as the great equalizer, yet time and time again, the sports mediocrity has proven to be a myth. There is no meritocracy, rather, excuse me, the sport meritocracy. There is no merit. There is no meritocracy in a society run by the Urugu, run by Europeans. There is no meritocracy. They've always liked to say that. You know, that's like when I came on the fire department. No, we shouldn't have affirmative action. We should be a meritocracy. No, because one thing, you mothers have never done anything off merit. You always had breaks. You always had those things. Why it matters? In theory, sports are an escape. In reality, they're a mirror, often perpetuating the most unjust aspects of society. We tend to think of sports as being at the forefront of racial progress, said Damian Thomas, sports curator at the Smithsonian Institute in D.C. But historically, sports have been symbols of oppression that reinforce negative stereotypes. The big picture? At each step along athletes' journey, from their youth to college to professional world, to the professional world, there are glaring inequities, inequalities, often along racial lines. Youth. The widening accessibility gap in youth sports has led to historically low participation and ended a disproportionate number of minority children, or children of color, whatever word you want to use, athletic careers before they even get started. They end them. College. Universities generate billions of dollars in revenue off the backs of predominantly American African football and basketball players, while affluent sports like fencing have funneled rich Caucasian athletes to elite institutions. Post-playing career. Many retired athletes stay around the game, but they lack opportunities to be coaches, to be assistants, to be managers, general managers. People of color make up 75% of the NFL players, but only 12% of head coaches and 6% of general managers. I didn't know he was that high. I don't think we have about 3 or 4 coaches in the NFL. A few more, of course, in the NBA. Between the lines, it's not just the way sports are structured that can limit people of color and perpetuate stereotypes. It's also the way we talk about these sports. A 2020 study found that soccer commentary is full of racial, soccer is terrible. It's full of racial bias, with Caucasian players more likely to be credited with admirable work ethic and American African or African players often reduced strictly to their physical abilities. That's often been said about us. It was said that we are just gifted naturally. They're, the Europeans, the Caucasians, like Larry Bird, are hardworking and a good work ethic. You know, they're more intelligent. You know, it's been a constant. You know, that's a constant belief to this very day, even though all of those things have been proven otherwise. But they still believe it because, once again, it's part of cognitive dissonance. It's part of cognitive dissonance. Europeans, Caucasians, white folks, Urugu, whatever, crackers, whatever, suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior and in a damn thing you can do or say to prove otherwise, even though there's a plethora of information that says not. But they don't want to hear it because they also suffer from fragility. Yeah. In 2020, athletes fully realize the power of the collective voice, driving the national conversation, inspiring changes in ways that the predecessors can only dream about. The new legislation that will allow, see, this is bogus. The new legislation that will allow college athletes to profit off their name, image, and likeness. At least part of the system will begin a course correction. But it's weak because that's very few players. That's a very, even right now, they ain't nobody in the NC2A that could profit off their likeness. Seriously. The only person I heard a lot about was Cade Cunningham. And they lost the other day, Cade Cunningham of Oklahoma State. There's not one person that is really big and known in the NC2A. Basketball. Like years ago when you had Kareem or you had a Jordan or you had some guy that you know, that was really big. That's not happening. Because the other thing is, brother and sisters, is that they control the media. They control the narrative. So them saying you can profit off your name and likeness. Who are you? Yeah. They propose a timeline here in the article on of athletes, American African athletes particularly, even have Jim Thorpe. You know, Jim Thorpe at 19. In 1884, Moses Fleetwood Walker became the first American African to play in a Major League Baseball game, the Toledo Blue Stockings, in a game against the Louisville Eclipse in 1884. It's always been just like Fritz Pollard was the first in football. There's many, quote, first. It's a big deal. Jim Thorpe became the first Native American to win Olympic gold, winning two events in 2012 in Stockholm, Sweden. Now, of course, he had to give those up because the Olympics was amateur and he had played professional football with the Canton Bulldogs, Canton, Ohio. They don't say that in the piece here, but that's a fact. In fact, in the story of Jim Thorpe, All-American, of course, they couldn't find an indigenous person, Native American, to play him. And so Burt Lancaster played him in Jim Thorpe, All-American. Jackie Robinson debuts at first base for the Brooklyn Dodgers, becoming the first American African to play Major League Baseball in the modern era in 1947. Of course, that became problematic because Jackie Robinson breaking the so-called color barrier also killed the Negro Leagues, a whole industry of brothers and sisters traveling around that summertime to various communities that had a hotel for us, restaurants for us, nightlife for us. They killed it because we wanted to integrate. And then come to find out, if given an opportunity, and even those so-called segregated teams kick the major league's ass. Dizzy Dean and them boys from the St. Louis Cardinals. In 1956, Althea Gibson wins the French Open, becoming the first American African tennis player to win a Grand Slam title. And other sister Althea Gibson. U.S. sprinter Tommy in 1968. Remember like it was yesterday. U.S. sprinter Tommy Smith and John Carlos raised their fist in the Black Power salute during the 200-meter race medal ceremony, having won gold and bronze, respectively, at the Mexican Games in the 1990s. And then George Foreman's ass, when he won the title, he waving flags and shit. I can't stand George Foreman. I swear, I was so happy when Muhammad Ali dust
moves in America.
It sounds like Jay. What's up, Jay? How you doing, man?
Oh, man, I thought you had me on mute.
Yeah, well, I tried to.
What do you mean about who is you? I'm the white man. I do whatever the hell I want to do. What do you mean? Who are you? I'm the white man.
That's right. I run, AJ, I run this. I'm running this.
You know. Crack can tell you that every 3 minutes.
Hey, listen, Jay. There's a movie, and if you got some children, this is one of the movies I always show to the young people I worked with back in Milwaukee when I was on my off days from the fire department. It's called Brother Future. Have you seen it, you think? Have you seen it, Brother Future?
I may have.
Because it's old. It's the 90s. It's the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it the one with Joe Morton?
No. This is the one with Moses Gunn. No. Moses Gunn's in it, you know. But this is a young brother who's on the streets of Detroit. You know, he got a little hustle game going. In fact, at the beginning of the movie, he rips off some cats who are ripping off. Some cats who are ripping off an electronics store. He rips them off, you know. And so he is selling stuff on the streets. And in fact, one day in school, he's daydreaming and he has a premonition about something. It's really weird, you know. And so he's talking to his brother Crunch. And Crunch's educated brother, he's, you know, with the red, black, and green African medallion on and shit. And so what happened is that the cops roll up and he runs and he makes a turn. He gets bumped by a car and he gets transposed back to 1822 South Carolina. 1822 South Carolina in Charleston was Denmark Vesey. Denmark Vesey. And so he sold it. I'm going to tell you, listeners, you can go on YouTube. I think they may even have the whole movie for you on YouTube, Brother Future, you know. And I'm saying it to say there's a part in it because he's now in captivity. There's a part in it after he tried to run away and he was beaten and he has to go into the big house to get something from the so-called massa. And he says, there's a certain, the Caucasian, He said, there's a certain order in this world
that
must be obeyed. I am the master. You are the slave.
You know?
And then he finds out he can read. Oh, this is a deep, it's a good movie, brothers and sisters. So if you can, you know, show it to your children, grandchildren, this is a good movie. Brother Future. Okay.
I will definitely check it out.
Please do, Jay. You
know, like you were saying, in regards to this whole NCAA thing, it's a slave-master relationship at its finest.
It is. It really is, man. It's sickening and it's sad.
People really don't understand the real essence of the relationship and how the relationship functions in regards to black people, in a sense, moving forward.
Yeah. See, what happened, Jay, what happened was this. They realized the potential of making so much money that they said, these cats just can't be athletes. They have to be student athletes. That's why you always seen that they emphasize that. No, they're students. They're just like any other student on the student body of this university. They just don't happen to play sports. No big deal.
That's how they get them to be the slaves that they are. They give them a little something. I mean, the slave master gave you bad shelter, bad food, bad everything.
Yeah.
But you had to do what you had to do. So here it is. They giving them an education, and they supposed to accept that education, play ball, make a lot of money for the university and the coach and all that, and then go along about their business.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully, you know, they're intelligent enough to take advantage of it. Now, I'm going to say this. If you're a good Negro, there's some benefits from it. I mean, let's be honest. If you have the capacity and the ability to be educated and you act and behave like a good Negro, in that environment, it should lead to you being successful.
Right.
I know numerous kids
exactly.
who have played sports and did the right thing, and they now live very good lives, functioning lives. It's like being sold off to a certain other slave master.
Right, because that's the thing. Jay, the thing is this, is that we reward that. I just read that in Inyase. I know you don't listen in the morning when I read the Inyase Sim, Dr. Baruti.
I don't do I don't do the 40-45, bro. I love you, but I'm sorry. Can't do it. You know?
But listen, what is stated there and stated period, that individually you will be rewarded, but collectively it'll never happen. Individually, it's okay. You know, I just don't want a whole bunch of them, but it's okay if you move down the street. You know, we might even say, oh, we got one Negro in our neighborhood, or you might be the first Negro in the school and be proud. And, well, my daughter's the first one to go to that school. You know, all these firsts. Here it is, 2021, whatever, and they're talking about first this. I'm adamant about no damn comparisons to what Caucasians do. The only thing only thing I would praise is when a group of us have done something to further us in towards our journey towards liberation and sovereignty. That's what I praise.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah. But let me finish this and I'm going to get back to you, okay? Hang on, Jay.
All right.
In 1973, Roberto Clemente, who I loved, first Latino and Caribbean major league player inducted into the Hall of Fame, Roberto Clemente in 1973, because in the 60s and the 70s, 71, family, remember that? We are family, yeah. Willie Stargell, Manny Sanguin, loved it. Pittsburgh Pirates. In 1996, the Denver Nuggets guard Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf is suspended for refusing to stand during the national anthem, calling it a symbol of tyranny and oppression. Ashe. Love Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, formerly known as Chris Jackson out of LSU. Man, this cat was cold. I mean, great shooter. In 2010, Jeremy Lin became the first American Chinese or Taiwanese descent to play in the NBA. In 2016, San Francisco quarterback Colin Kaepernick refuses to stand for the national anthem to protest police use of excessive force against people of color. And wasn't he right? Now, in 2020, the Miami Marlins hired Kim Nang as their general manager, making her the first Asian American woman to be a general manager in Major League Baseball. That was the timeline. I'm not going to go to the doors here. I'm going to go here, the college sports machine. College sports is a multi-billion dollar industry built largely on the backs of American African student athletes who can't profit off their name and image and likeness and graduate far lower than their Caucasian teammates. The state of play, football and men's basketball, both predominantly played by American African athletes, generate the vast majority of the revenue that underwrites college athletic departments and pays coaches massive salaries. I just told you about the millions of dollars these people make. Al McGuire coached the Marquette Warriors. I'm from Milwaukee, so you know. I loved Marquette, you know. But I remember Dean Membership, he got some cats from New York. He would go to New York because he's from New York, you know, Al McGuire. And he was coaching at Marquette, and he would go to New York and get some guys. He got Dean Membership, he got George Thompson, a few others. And so Dean Membership was on the team. And so he said to a writer or whatever, he said, "See that driveway that's paved? Dean Membership paid for that." It wasn't that he was supporting athletes getting paid. He's understanding and saying that these athletes, these greater athletes, because he could have got all those Caucasians in Milwaukee, okay, who wasn't about and couldn't do nothing. Even his son, Ali McGuire, who played for him around that time, you know, went all that. But he went, you go get the talent. That's what I said in moments ago about Paul Bear Bryant at Alabama. Why he wanted John McKay to bring his USC team down because they had all those brothers. And the reason why I love USC, and that's one of my favorite college teams, is because they played brothers at quarterback years ago. In fact, in 63, when Wisconsin Badgers played in the Rose Bowl against USC, I cheered for USC, you know. But anyway, so, you know, he understood that. That's the reality, that these men, these young men who come into these make millions of dollars for the university and the coaching staff and so forth, and they don't get a damn dime. In 40 states in this country, the head football or basketball coach was the highest paid public employee as of January 2020. Yet athletes have no collective bargaining rights, long-term medical care, or even guaranteed scholarships. On most Division I campuses, American African students are disproportionately athletes. Take LSU, where Louisiana State University, where one out of every 11 American African males is a scholarship athlete, compared to one out of every 125 Caucasian males. Great graduation success rate. The graduation success rate for American African football players on bowl-bound teams in 2020 was 73%. 16% lower than Caucasians at almost 90%. 40% of bowl-bound schools had graduation success rates for American African players that were at least 20 percent points lower than for Caucasians. The popularity of football and basketball disguises the fact that the rest of the college sports is made up of predominantly white middle-class athletes, Caucasian middle-class athletes. And since these sports don't make money, the revenue generated by football and basketball subsidizes their very existence, as well as some academic endeavors. little bit more here. Breaking barriers. In place for people of color on mostly Caucasian business side of professional sports is a Herculean task to break those barriers. You know, you can play, but you're not going to be managers. You're not going to be assistant managers or general managers. You're not going Here's why it matters. When their short-lived careers are over, many professional athletes are not welcome into the sport's established power structure. Instead, they face retirement with sometimes limited earning potential as they make the transition. Pro sports careers can be broken into four end goals: your playing career, coaching, top-level management, and ownership. Success on a field or a court isn't an easy way of making it in other levels. So you can have the success on the court, but that's not going to say that you're going to be able to transition from playing to coaching to management and ownership. Household names like Magic and Michael went from marquee NBA stars to sports team owners and private sector moguls. And LeBron James, oh, he's going to be off the chain. In fact, he owns part of the Boston Red Sox. He had to get into that because that's what he wants to do. I mean, you know, he's a Yankee fan. But for most, it is a difficult path from players to power broker. When Jackie Robinson became the first American athlete to integrate baseball in 1947, he paved the way for racial integration in sports. Yuck. However, the domino effect led to the destruction of multi-billion dollar American African-owned and operated Negro leagues. As the major leagues pilfered the talent pool, says Kenneth Shropshire, CEO of Global Sports Institute. The result, minority-led groups have been shut out of ownership for generations. Even Hall of Fame baseball player Reggie Jackson was reportedly rebuffed on attempts to become an owner. Meteoric rise in team values mean people of color are still locked out of ownership because of the racial wealth gap. Present day teams are sold for $3 to $5 billion, precluding almost everyone aside from predominantly Caucasian billionaires. Set the lack of diversity at the top trickles down to hiring for senior management and coaching roles. The vast majority of NFL coaches are Caucasian, even though coaches of color boast better statistics, according to the Global Sports Institute on hiring and firing trends. Despite the rule requiring teams to interview, at least in the Rooney Rule, one diverse candidate for vacant head coaching positions, there are now only three American African coaches, the same number as it was when the Rooney Rule was implemented in 2003. Still only three. And more Caucasian head coaches are hired at a wide range and land jobs more frequently for senior positions after being fired. The bottom line, progress and representation of people of color in sports has been uneven and will continue to be. If anybody wants to get on this conversation, I'm going to bring you back in. Jay, you got anything else?
Hey, Oshie, you know the amazing thing is that if you're a good Negro and you play sports and you have intelligence, you could become very successful, man.
Well, as I said to you, individually, yes, you could become very successful. Very. You could be a billionaire.
But collectively, it's a whole different ball game.
And you're right.
It's like funny. I always hear these guys talk about blacks coming together to own a sports team.
Right.
You know, to be truthful, if you haven't played sports, that's not really a reality. I mean, think about it. Collectively, so-called Ricky Rich Negroes like Oprah, P. Diddy, Jay-Z, and the rest of them coming together to you know, purchase a basketball team or some other team, more than likely a white man going to be in charge. A white man is going to be the one, spinning the wheels, because, to be honest, that's not their skill set. You know what I mean? I mean, that's why you have someone like a Serena and a Sista, you know, Jay-Z, Magic, and the rest of them going out there purchasing a stake in sports, like Derek Jeter, one of the good Negroes, and things of that nature. But the reality is, in all truthfulness, I don't even understand why black people want to be a part of that anyway, other than to be a show pony. You know what I mean? Yeah. Build industry. Do other things. You know, well, as far as sports, I mean, right. Yeah, you're going to make money probably, but it ain't all that it's cracked up to be. It's just another form of visualization.
Right. It's just like when somebody who's very rich, they own horses, and they, you know, and they can't wait till May for, you know, Kentucky Derby, Preakness. And the Belmont Stakes, when they're really shown and on TV and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, for those who have that kind of wealth, the bottom line for us is not about the wealth, the monetary wealth that Caucasians have that we should try to emulate. What should happen is that we should create reality and shape it in fashion our own image and interest. And so, therefore, whatever they say we can't do... Or we can't have because it's theirs. Forget it. We don't want it. We reject it.
But you know, Oshie, I'm not sure about this, but I assume this to be true. When Major League Baseball rated the black leagues, black baseball, I don't think the players were rewarded more financially. I don't, because remember, years later, when Kurt Flood did what he did to become a free agent in regards to the manner in which he was treated, they had already been in the league for years.
Right.
So I don't know if, you know, the players really benefited from that.
No.
But it's just the mindset. And then lastly, it was used, to be honest, to create and move forward the so-called integration civil rights movement, which we now know, in a sense, has been detrimental to our development as African people. So anytime you integrate with this oppressor, you think you're winning, but in all actuality and reality, you're not winning.
You ain't winning, bro. You got it, Jay. Appreciate you, man.
Hotep.
Hotep, brother. Yeah. March Madness really is a stirring reminder of what America was founded on, making tons of money off the labor of unpaid African people. Yes, and that is what it will be until we stop it. All of this craziness will be until African people released a vice grip that these Europeans, these Caucasians, these Urugus, and all the other good adjectives, the cracker, threw that one in for you, Jay, has on our minds. Because not only is our liberation impossible, it is unthinkable, because what we cannot conceive, we will never achieve. We have to release that vice grip and look at the European for who and what they are. Not that we challenge them. Hell with them. But now we know who we are, and we come together to do for ourselves. Imagine if we had a league where all of us were in. It ain't about the money. It's the talent that and who and what we are. Because if it wasn't for that, nobody would watch that bull. If it was just Caucasians, nobody would watch that. I told you what Elgin Baylor did. Elgin Baylor literally saved the Los Angeles Lakers, and he saved the NBA and all the guys that came after them, those high flyers. So, brothers and sisters, I appreciate today being able to talk about sports talk about its impact on our lives and the impact of Elgin Baylor on my life. No, I didn't. It's like Kobe. Off the court, not really. But on the court, I loved him, you know. There's only a few people outside of their particular profession, such as Muhammad Ali, do I love outside of boxing. In fact, I love Muhammad Ali before he joined the nation, when he was so braggadocious and, you know, calling rounds. But then I loved him even more when he challenged Caucasians, when he told them in their face, "You my oppressor," when I want freedom. "You my oppressor." I loved it. I love brothers and sisters that stand up, for us, and stand up in dignity and respect. I love it. And challenge them. I love it. Because I love us and I love you. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. "The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed." This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell damn it don't want to pay for. Before I close it, I want to say this. Brother Paul told me they don't get the program in the UK no more. They blocked it. They blocked Time for an Awakening. So Brother Paul can't hear the program, although he called in last week to tell us that, and I appreciate that. I'll be giving him a call to find out how we can make that happen. So they don't get the program no more in the UK. Damn it. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Peace, family. Hope to see you on Friday. My guest will be Brother Akil Parker, and we're going to talk about Sister Asada Shakur. Peace, family.